Welcome to Mixture Stories, an open-ended fantasy and sci-fi podcast for kids. We have invented a world that our imaginations can explore, and you are invited to join us by listening and adding your ideas for future episodes.
So, please visit our website at makeshowstories.com or send us an email at makeshowstories@gmail.com. Now, sit back, relax, and close your eyes as we listen to Episode 8, Gia.
A private jet banked lazily over a small island that rudely broke the endless turquoise of the Caribbean Sea. The sleek plane momentarily glinted in the hot sun as it turned and circled back on its final approach to an airstrip wedged onto a narrow peninsula. It was the only available flat space in sight, and the runway had been extended out over the water on a rusty gray metal structure. From the right angle, it looked like an old aircraft carrier had been rammed into the rocky coast. Adrian looked through the portal and watched as an artificial landscape flowed by. It seemed that there wasn't one square inch of space that hadn't been cemented over or built on. Buildings and streets chaotically clung to the bare rocks like overgrown barnacles, their austere gray in stark contrast to the natural blue of the tropical sea and the brilliant green of the few remaining palms. The plane leveled off, its landing gear dropping down, making a jarring clunk. Adrian closed his eyes and tensed his body as he waited for the bump and the revving of the jet engines as the thrust reversers kicked in. Flying always made him a bit nervous. He couldn't help thinking about the thousands of mechanical parts that needed to work together to keep the plane in the air. This indeed was a strange world, he thought. Everyone around him seemed oblivious to the tenuous dance of casually made components that their lives currently depended on. It was one of the few places that he had lived where people placed such faith in the fickleness of the machines they invented. Since being escorted out of the Europa Cafe one day earlier, Adrian, Tim, and Maya had been driven, bussed, and finally flown through a world gone crazy. Factories, industrial plants, buildings, stores, and roads appeared to fill every available nook and cranny of the countryside. It seemed like the planet was in the process of being paved over, so the sight of huge buildings and structures fighting for space in the tiny island wasn't entirely unexpected. Adrian was thrown against his seatbelt as the plane braked hard. Even the security chief that had accompanied them on the flight from the GIA North American head office seemed a bit concerned.
Short runway. You'd think they'd fix that, but they haven't, and probably won't until there's been a few more accidents.
Adrian, Maya, and Tim cringed at the thought.
Accidents?
Adrian nervously echoed.
How often?
Only two or three a year, and they're usually at night. The radar is pretty dodgy, so I don't fly at night myself unless I absolutely have to.
The plane taxied over to where a large black sedan was waiting. As soon as it came to a stop, the security chief signaled an anxious-looking steward who cracked open the door, causing a small set of aluminum steps to spring out, then gently lower to the ground. Humid tropical air wafted in, smelling of the ocean and jet exhaust.
Time to get off, kids. Let's get moving. Head office never likes being kept waiting,
barked the security chief. Reluctantly, the three filed past the steward, who looked relieved to be rid of them, and out onto the sun-baked tarmac. Even if they had wanted to make a break for freedom, there was nowhere to go. The ocean surrounded the runway on three sides. It was at least 20 meters from the tarmac to the shallow ocean broiling away below, and the land end was blocked by a tall wall and a dated, grimy-looking terminal building. A driver, dressed in what Tim felt was a vaguely familiar uniform, stood stiffly beside the sedan. He had the back door already open and waiting. Like a group of condemned prisoners, Adrian, Maya, and Tim shuffled into the back seat. The big security chief slammed the back door shut and got into the front with the driver.
Let's get this over with, Ned.
And with that, the driver started the sedan and sped off through a security gate in the wall. They sat in tense silence for a moment, then Maya spoke up.
Hey, you. You can't hold us here without charges. There's national laws, you know. Even Gia has to follow them.
It's more likely that Gia wrote them, the security chief shot back as he stared straight ahead. Then menacingly, he turned around and added,
You can rest assured, young lady, that Gia's security office has been hard at work generating the proper paperwork. And let me tell you, there won't be any mistakes.
But my parents... My parents will protest. You broke national laws when you took us offshore.
The big man's face flushed crimson with frustration.
Your parents... Your parents will do nothing if they want to keep their franchise, and you... You are all flagged online, and that's international law. So this is entirely within Gia's realm. Don't expect help from the outside.
A heavy curtain of silent pessimism fell over the car's interior. Only the hum of the engine and the occasional rattle could be heard as they sped through the bumpy, busy streets. Outside the car, a strange, crowded urban world flowed by. They drove towards the center of the island for 15 minutes, until suddenly they could see Gia headquarters rising aggressively above the tight urban tangle like a bizarre medieval walled town. Its old stone walls were crowned by a mashup of architectural styles. Oversized Greek columns were intersected by the sharp rectangles of glass and steel windows. Randomly placed ceramic onion domes sat atop plasticized arches. What even appeared to be cabanas built from local palm fronds sprouted from the walls at random intervals. The overall effect, thought Tim, was rather humorous, pretentious, and ominous all at once. The sight of the building gave no one in the car any comfort or any notion of what to expect. The dark sedan sped toward what looked like an old gatehouse punched through the exterior wall. Its gate wasn't opening as the car rapidly approached. Tim, Adrian, and Maya closed their eyes and tensed, expecting the car to slam into the iron bars at full speed, but instead it glided through the closed gate like it wasn't there. The security chief laughed as the driver finally started braking before he turned into a large covered garage.
Thought you were gonna die, didn't you?
Prodded the security chief as he smugly grinned at his captives.
I love doing that to everyone when they first arrive.
Some kind of projection?
No, nothing that simple. Top secret. I can't tell you. But I love the expression on everyone's face when we go through. I can't get enough of that. It's my favorite part of the job.
The driver skillfully negotiated a narrow ramp as the sedan descended several stories to the bottom level of the garage. Noticing his passenger's discomfort, the driver commented,
Standard procedure. We enter through the most obscure door,
he chuckled.
Huh, that way. No one witnesses you entering, and no one knows when you don't leave.
The sedan pulled up and stopped by a dimly lit freight elevator. Dust, disturbed by the car, made the headlamps project shafts of fuzzy light into the depths of the vast, dark underground complex. Tim thought the effect looked a bit like the spotlights of a deep-sea sub, but the illusion was broken as the driver walked through the headlights around the car to open the passenger side doors. The security chief got out first wearing infrared glasses and slowly looked around the garage. Finally satisfied, he took the glasses off and then gestured for the kids to get out of the car. Once they were all standing beside him, he put his right eye in front of what looked like the end of a small telescope that jutted out from the wall beside the elevator. Next, he pressed a button and waited. The center of the eyepiece momentarily glowed a soft blue. Then a voice from a hidden speaker announced,
Access granted. Proceed to the 50th floor, executive boardroom.
The elevator door immediately slid up, revealing an old, dirty, well-used freight elevator. Adrian, Tim, and Maya were impatiently herded in by the driver. The security chief entered last, hit the close button, and as the door slid down, he told the driver to wait.
Don't go wandering off like last time. Wait here. I'll be done quickly.
The door banged closed, and the old freight elevator jerked into motion. Floor numbers crept by the elevator cage as it creaked and groaned its way up the shaft.
At the 25th floor, it suddenly lurched and momentarily dropped, causing everyone to grab for the cage before continuing on its ascent.
How many people have died using this thing?
Adrian asked.
It's way safer than landing at the airstrip, but I wouldn't be worried about the elevator. In my entire time here, I've never taken anyone to the executive boardroom. You must have done something incredibly damaging.
What do you mean? Look, we haven't done anything. So I'm sure once we get there and we talk to senior management, this'll all get straightened out and we'll be on our way home.
You're not going to see senior management. You're going to see the COO.
So, what's the problem with that? We can tell them our story too, and they can check it out, right?
Maya's face turned white.
It's the COO, Tim. You know, he's part of the AAT.
Tim shrugged his shoulders and looked at Maya with a puzzled expression.
You really have been living under a rock, haven't you, Tim? The AAT stands for Advanced Administration Team, the group no one has ever seen.
This is definitely a one-way trip. Once you've met them, they can't let you go. It's just standard policy. The AAT must remain anonymous.
Why? What are they afraid of?
Adrian's question was met with silence as the elevator continued to creak and complain its way up the tower. Tim, Maya, and Adrian stood silently watching the floor numbers go by. 40, 41, 42, 43. The elevator rudely stopped at the 50th floor.
This is as far as I go,
the security chief informed them as he started sliding the elevator door open.
But how do we...
Find the boardroom. Just follow the black line on the floor. You can't miss it.
He then hastily pushed the kids out of the elevator. He seemed small and fearful as he anxiously looked around the empty reception area before he slammed the elevator door shut. Immediately, they heard it rapidly descend.
Wow, he's in a hurry,
Adrian noted as he turned away from the elevator. The group stood for a moment trying to gather their bearings. The security chief had been right. There was no way to get lost. Before them stretched an immense hallway. It was lit by ornate gold chandeliers hung from a red plaster ceiling. Mirrored panels lined the walls between fake, gilded Corinthian columns. The purple marble floor had been inlaid with large black stone tiles that formed a path leading down the hall away from the elevator. The place was pretentious and even a bit tacky, thought Adrian. Had their situation not been so dire, he might have even laughed at it. Adrian's thoughts were suddenly interrupted by a metallic voice that came echoing through the empty space.
Follow the black path to the boardroom and wait there.
For a moment, no one moved, and the voice repeated.
Follow the path. Now. The COO doesn't like to be kept waiting.
Then, after a moment, almost as an afterthought, the speaker crackled again, and the voice almost apologetically said,
Please.
This last bit took everyone off guard, and Maya snickered.
They don't sound so tough. Let's get this over with.
So the three kids started off towards the far end of the hall. The mirrors gave it the illusion of great length and width, but the hall was much smaller than it looked. If anything, it narrowed towards the far end, and the ceiling appeared to move up, distorting the perspective, making them feel tiny and crowded at the same time. They quickly arrived at an impressively large oak door with a Gia crest on it. Tim tentatively tested it, and the door casually swung open. On the other side was a large boardroom, decorated in the same tacky colors as the hallway. The center of the room was taken up by a large oak table, covered with mother-of-pearl inlays that appeared to depict moments in Gia's history. The walls were covered in red velvet, except for the far end, where a heavy gold lamé curtain was hung. As the three stepped into the room, a speaker cracked to life.
Sit down in the chairs closest to the door.
The voice quickly faded and was replaced by faint muzak. Adrian, Tim, and Maya cautiously sat down in three overstuffed chairs that had been placed at the end of the table closest to them. The voice came back again, encouraging them to drink and relax while they waited. A few minutes passed and Maya began to get impatient.
This is not a form of interrogation.
I wouldn't relax too much, Maya. You can't tell what they're up to. Plus, there's something oddly familiar about that voice we've been hearing.
Hey, you brought us here, so let's talk. If you don't show yourselves, then we're out of here. I don't see anyone guarding a door.
Maya's voice dissipated into the silence of the room. Adrian and Tim looked at each other.
Are you serious?
Of course I am. They can't keep us here forever.
The lights over Tim, Adrian, and Maya's heads suddenly got brighter, making it hard to see. At the far end of the room, a large shadowy figure moved against the gold curtains. Its head, or rather the tentacle-like objects extending from its head, brushed the ceiling. Fur seemed to cover its entire body. It stood there, momentarily surveying the room in a princely-like manner, before it focused its gaze on the three kids, now sitting stiffly in their seats. Maya gasped and said,
"It's true. They're not human."
Tim and Adrian stared in shock. Tim finally spoke.
"Amos? Amos, is that you? But you look huge. What happened?"
"A little trick, my friend, to keep the workers in line,"
Amos said as he walked around the end of the table toward them. He seemed to shrink as he walked, until Amos stood beside them barely at knee height. Seeing puzzlement on their faces, he explained,
"When you live in a world of giants, you need to level the playing field. It's an optical illusion. The room is small on that end, so I look big. Sorry I had to put you through that, but I needed to be sure who you were. We've been waiting a long time for you to arrive. Now let's go somewhere more comfortable and talk."
Adrian and Tim breathed a sigh of relief, but Maya stepped back in confusion.
"What's going on? You know the COO?"
"It's a long story, Maya. I think we should take Amos up in his offer and go somewhere more comfortable to talk."
Amos led them down a small hallway that lay behind a hidden door at the side of the boardroom. Unlike the great hall they'd just come through, this one was plain and dingy. The ceiling was so low that the kids had to bend slightly as they walked. The hallway opened into a small lounge, furnished with pillows and tables. Amos gestured for them to sit down and called an assistant to bring food. Tim and Maya selected two comfy-looking pillows near each other and hesitantly settled into them. Adrian chose to sit cross-legged on the floor near the table that Amos had positioned himself behind. Amos waved his hand across the corner of the table, and the curtains behind them pulled back, revealing a panoramic view of the Caribbean Sea. Cumulus clouds drifted by with indifference, and the horizon hinted of a late-day storm. But Maya, Tim, and Adrian were not watching. Maya looked at Amos and asked,
"Why are the ceilings so low?"
But before Amos could answer, Tim piped up,
"They were like that in Ceres too, when I was there. The Triffles, the race Amos belongs to, well, they're sort of big squirrels. Not very tall, so everything they make is scaled to their height."
"I've told you before that we're not squirrels. And now that I know what a squirrel is, I find that comparison definitely insulting."
"Sorry,"
Tim quickly apologized.
"I met the Triffle in a place called Ceres. This is kind of hard to explain, because I don't really understand everything that's happened, but I think I ended up on Ceres accidentally."
"What's Ceres?"
"A small and miserable frozen world, light years from here."
Emil started to explain, but Tim cut in again.
You wouldn't really want to go there, Maya. Amos and his group."
"The Advanced Administration Team,"
Amos corrected.
"They saved me from freezing on the surface after I crashed there. Then, and this is where things really get a bit bizarre, my friend Adrian showed up, or should I say his mind showed up on Ceres in Amos's body to bring me back to Earth. But it's probably better to skip the rest for now. Anyway, Adrian opened some kind of portal and we jumped through. Amos and his group first, then Adrian and I followed a few minutes later, and now we're here. But it's not the same place we left. Something's gone wrong, really wrong. Maya, this may seem normal to you, but Gia shouldn't exist."
As Tim paused, trying to collect his thoughts, Maya sat perfectly still, staring past Tim to the clouds in the sky outside, trying to decide what to believe. Adrian was looking at Tim when a smile of understanding slowly spread across his face. He turned and addressed Amos.
Amos, when did you get here?
About 200 years ago. We didn't know your coordinates were off until we landed, spread out over the island in a line.
This end of the portal was drifting, wasn't it?
It wasn't that hard to figure out. The trick was understanding that it was slowing in time, but moving at a constant rate in space.
Amos literally bristled with pride as he spoke.
Only a group like the advanced administration team could figure it out. Based on when we assumed that you and Tim jumped, we calculated where and when you would land. We were right about the place, and off plus or minus 6 months on the time, so it was easy to find you. We are in your gratitude, Adrian, for freeing us from Cerez. And to honor you, we have saved 2 board positions for you and Tim in our current endeavor, the Great Economic Administrative Alliance, or GEA, as the locals like to call us.
Adrian was too stunned to talk, and for a few moments, the only sound in the room was the labored hum of the air conditioning trying to compete with the tropical heat and the muffled sounds of waves crashing onto the distant shore.
So you're responsible for this mess,
Tim accused.
What mess? We don't create messes, we create order. We provide the framework for peace, order, and material growth. Then it's up to the locals to do what they want. But the ones here are behaving similar to the ones on Kalon. There, the environment eventually collapsed, but it was one of our best projects. We created the most beautiful social and industrial management scheme that I have ever seen. I'm still extremely proud of our work there. The ones here are behaving similar to the ones on Kalon.
Kalon was a disaster. After its natural resources were exhausted, the population was left destitute.
We only create the rules for order and efficiency. How our structures are used beyond that is not our concern, Adrian. To look at it another way, we provide the delivery mechanisms. We don't care what's being delivered. When we arrived here, the place was riddled with poverty and threatened by constant war. Our system put an end to that. We brought order to this world.
And I paid for your so-called work on Kalon, with 1,000 years of exile. My people still believe I'm responsible for the devastation there. I'm a fugitive, Amos, because of you and your insidious work.
All the more reason to join us, Adrian. It's a pity you don't see the elegance of our mission.
Amos lamented as he poured a glass of water, paused, then slowly held the glass up to the light. He stared thoughtfully through it and continued.
I suppose, then, it must have been your people who pulled us away from Satyr just when our best-designed system was about to be implemented. They were the ones who imprisoned us on that wretched world, Cerez, weren't they? So there's a kind of justice to the fact that one of their own freed us.
Amos pondered his last statement, and with a self-inflated emphasis, put the glass back down on the table and sauntered over to the ceiling-to-floor windows at the other end of the room and stared out. After a moment, he continued.
We've offered you board positions, and I'm sure we can find an appropriate honorary role for your new friend as well. This is a great honor. So join us. Help us pursue the perfect plan, Adrian.
Adrian looked at Tim and Maya, but both shook their heads.
No, we can't help you destroy another world, Amos. We can't accept your offer.
We're not the ones destroying it. They are. With every decision they make, they've chosen short-term gain instead of sustainability, and are destroying themselves in the process.
Amos said, pointing down to the streets of the surrounding town.
It's not our role to tell them what to do. We are organizers and administrators. Our system is perfect and extremely efficient. So the civilization they have chosen to create will come to its ultimate conclusion very quickly. It's their choice, not ours.
Maya fumed with anger and was about to speak when Amos continued.
Are you sure you want to reject our offer? Think carefully about this, Adrian. Discuss it amongst yourselves before you make a decision that you may regret.
Maya spoke first.
How can you let this happen? None of us want to be the authors of a mindless system that's blind to the suffering of those who live under it. You have to stop this. You're responsible.
Amos' fur bristled.
As I've repeated many times, we provide only the means. We are not responsible for how our work is used. It's not our way. I take it, then, that you are rejecting our generous offer.
Silence again worked its way around the room.
Okay, then.
Amos said, as he quickly walked back to the table. His voice had changed from friendly to impersonal.
You can understand that we must keep our true nature secret, so we can't let you go. However, we are not violent people.
Outside, the storm that had been clinging to the horizon all day rolled ashore, taking the heat away and hiding the late afternoon sun behind towering thunderheads.
Thanks for listening to Episode 8, Gia. If you like what you've been hearing, please tell your friends about us. Or go to our website at makeshiftstories.com and help contribute to the next story. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and writing a review. We'd like to thank David and Carol for helping with the editing and production of Gia. And please stay tuned for Episode 9, which will be coming out at the end of March.